Thank you. 24 minutes to 8. You might remember that family courts were open to the press for the first time at the end of April. We reported on it at the time, following, as it did, an intensive campaign which focused on miscarriages of justice. The case of the Webster family, for instance, whose three children were removed and adopted on the basis of medical evidence which was later overturned. And yet, bar the first day or two since the press were allowed in, there's been remarkably little reporting of the family courts. Is that because judges are restricting what journalists can say? Well, our reporter, Sancha Berg, spent a fortnight in different family courts following various cases.
The principal registry in Holborn is something of a factory for family justice. A flat-fronted, undistinguished building, it houses more than 20 courtrooms, busy every day with cases from across the capital. One major strand of work here is care proceedings, local authorities applying to take children away from their families. Inside, the corridors are characterless. You could be in any local authority office or doctor's waiting room. There's purple carpet on the floor, calming prints framed on the walls. Only the tension on people's faces as they wait to go into court reminds you of the fraught business that's done here. Divorce and deciding the fate of children. The courts themselves are relatively informal. Like a seminar room, the judge's bench slightly raised, everyone else sitting at long desks. Barristers in front, in black suits, family and solicitors behind. Journalists are tucked into the corner, if they come in. The first case involving a child that I tried to listen to, the mother screamed and ran away down the corridors when she heard I was there. I decided not to stay. But no one objected in the next case. A local authority was applying to take several children from one family into care. The case had been going on for months, starting in January, overrunning its slot, held waiting for court time. It only finished last month. That's not uncommon, lawyers said. The courts are so busy. Eileen Munro is Professor of Social Policy at the London School of Economics.
It is common for cases to take several months to run all the way through, and it's very worrying because you're often dealing with very young children and you're talking about a significant percentage of their lives that is left insecure and uncertain. And it's very undesirable for a child to be in an unstable placement. And throughout this period of the decision being made about their long-term plans, they're in a very unstable setting.
In this case, the parents, who lived apart, had reluctantly accepted their youngest children would go into care. The mother was applying to keep the eldest boy, who's now 5. The father wanted to keep the eldest daughter, now 9. And in the middle of the hearings, the mother's parents had applied to have the eldest girl live with them. Psychologists had described all the adults as having low IQ and learning difficulties. The court heard evidence that the children living with their mother had been badly neglected. One of them, the eldest boy, had been injured by his father. One day the boy had arrived at nursery with bruising and cuts round his eyes. His father had thrown a shoe at him. In play, said the father. The eldest girl, who'd been living with her father, had been neglected too, the court heard, coming to school with sores on her face. More disturbing was her emotional state. The court heard that she'd had tantrums which had recently got worse, lasting up to 5 hours, and that in January she'd threatened her father with a knife.
This is a very typical kind of case. Mental illness, drug and drink problems and domestic violence and very low IQ are factors that are found in quite a number of cases in some combination.
The court heard there'd been a history of domestic violence between the parents. Experts said their difficult relationship had a direct effect on their children. It was the cause of the eldest girl's extreme behaviour, they said. The father's barrister disputed this, but the judge accepted the expert's view. She decided that all the children should be taken permanently into care. The boy and his younger siblings adopted. Journalists aren't allowed to see the expert reports. They're central to these cases. Jeremy Rosenblatt is a family barrister.
Well, the expert evidence is clearly crucial. It is the kernel, very often evidentially, of the case. The whole purpose of experts is in their expertise. They guide the parent who is seeking assessment. They guide the local authority. They guide the guardian. And, of course, they guide primarily the judge.
You can come into the family courts, as I've been doing, and taking notes and reporting what I can anonymise. But without those paper documents, those experts' full reports, I'm not really getting a full picture, am I?
No journalist can get a full picture without seeing the detail of experts' reports, both so that they can see that sometimes criticism of experts is wrong, and so they can glean how the court goes through the process of evaluation and then conclusion in its judgment, reliant upon those reports.
Unusually, the judge criticised the local authority in her judgment for failing to search for potential adoptive families. She decided to delay granting the adoption orders for the children, but that was simply to keep the pressure on the local authority. The eldest boy, for instance, might now, at 5, be considered too old for adoption. Eileen Munro again.
You make decisions working on the probabilities of what might happen, and the older the children have become, the harder it is for them to settle down in a new context, whether it's adoptive or foster care, and make really good, strong bonds with the people who care for them.
The eldest child, the 9-year-old girl, would stay in foster care. The court had been told she might do badly in the care system, drifting from placement to placement. But the judge rejected the grandparents as potential carers. She doubted they'd be able to provide the little girl with the calm and stable home she needed, and they were too close to their own daughter. The grandparents were very upset, but they didn't appeal. That's common in these cases. So, the end of a fairly typical case in the family courts. None of the lawyers seemed surprised at the decision. The mother wasn't there for judgment, though. On the last day of evidence, she'd collapsed sobbing in the street, leaning against the outside wall of the court, as if it was only then that she realised she could lose all her children forever.
Sancha Berg reporting, and you can hear from Sancha again on what she learnt in the last fortnight in the family courts in the programme tomorrow.